From the Carter Subaru Studios, this is the Jack and Spike Show.
Welcome back to the Jack and Spike Show. I'm Spike O'Neill. Jack Stein's taking a day today. Mike Lewis is going to sit in with us. Appreciate you being here, Mike.
Always happy to be here.
Renton Juvenile Crime, one statistic says, is up 900%. 900%. I know we get a lot of stories about juvenile crime. We'll get to this. But there's some other stories about a living wage in Seattle. A couple different communities handling things a little differently. In Burien, they've raised the minimum wage, but because of some allowances and trying to find a nice mix between the citizenry and the business community, a lot of the people's most in need of relief aren't going to see it. And in Seattle, the city council is already pushing to roll back delivery driver minimum wages laws that were just implemented a couple months ago.
Yep. Indeed.
So the city council is trying to find a balance again between business and the working man of Seattle in the form of gig drivers.
Right.
These new rate increases for drivers have caused more fees for us, the right. consumer who's using delivery services, and the businesses who are in this market. Now, I know that when Uber and Lyft were first into the business sphere, the businesses were running at a profit loss to establish themselves.
Right, market share.
Right, and now they have raised, if you've ever taken a Lyft or an Uber, you've realized that rates have gone through the roof.
Rates have gone to what they always should have been.
Well, exactly. So now with delivery drivers, businesses say this new wage requirement by the city of Seattle and other cities across the country, as gig workers become a more commonplace element in how we live our lives and do business.
Mm-hmm.
So the cost is being passed on to the consumer, the people using delivery service. And what they're saying now is they're going to roll back these rate increases for drivers. What are your thoughts on who deserves to make the money and who deserves to pay more for such an am I just alone in thinking it's an elaborate service to have delivery drivers bring food to your life?
Yeah, I mean, there's also people who have mobility issues, right?
And that's fair.
So they are also heavy users of these sort of things. And people who are, you know, older, maybe they're nervous about going and they can't drive at night, things like that.
Okay.
So I understand why people would use it. I agree with you. As a friend of mine who got maybe had a few too many drinks one night and then found out like 2 days later he had some sort of $90 Taco Bell.
Oh,
because he called DoorDash Taco Bell
for $90. Drink and dial and dash.
Exactly. So I get it. I get it that people don't, you know, sometimes people overly depend on this stuff when they should just get up and walk somewhere or go somewhere and take care of that. It does keep fewer vehicles on the road. So maybe there's an upside. But here's the thing. The city council mandating minimum wage also allowed these companies to front load more fees than they had on them before. And mm-hmm. these fees were designed to make them make a little extra money than to pay these wages. So essentially, the people who are paying the wages are the people who are ordering the food. That's the way every product works.
Exactly.
I have no particular problem with that. However, now they're rolling it back because what they found was that there were fewer orders and fewer drivers. It sort of started repressing the market.
The market worked, right?
Some of the drivers were against this additional wages because they were actually literally getting less work and then making less money
right.
as a result of all this. Plus, remember that a component of what they make is the tip. And when you raise prices, the first thing to fall is how much you're willing to tip.
More, exactly.
And
right.
that happens in every service industry job
yep.
everywhere on the planet. And so I don't know the details of the math behind the city council's decision, or at least a city council's move to roll this back. I'd like to read a little bit more of that. But my guess is that if they do roll it back, it's a fairly slight rollback. And maybe this is a fair correction. I don't know. I mean, I don't know that this is an abandonment of the whole city's push toward a livable minimum wage.
Mm-hmm.
I think that was a good thing. I am a person, you know, one of the people here.
You hire quite a few
I literally
employees.
Understand this because
yeah.
I'm a wage payer, right, in my business outside of this. And so I understand this, and I didn't protest it. I thought it was fine. The thing is, though, I do know how prices and how fees affect tips. And if a component of someone's money is tips, and trust me, it is a bigger component than you might be aware of, That is the thing that is getting affected here, and that is actually what is really netting the drivers less. So if this rollback actually means that it's not going to be continual, like, extra profit taking by, say, DoorDash or Postmates or whomever, and it does, that money actually goes to the drivers, or that extra work goes to the drivers and then becomes money, great. If it rolls back and it just means that it's increasing the margin for the businesses, yeah, I'm a little less impressed.
How about the businesses who hire these deliveries or use these delivery services? They took a real hit as well.
Yeah, absolutely.
Right? The restaurant industry, they saw less business being coming to their place because of these additional fees brought on by this wage and by the additional fees the company was slapping on top of this.
Yeah, I mean, this was one, to full disclosure, I don't really have a dog in this fight, but I have refused to do any business at all with any food delivery business. We don't do it. And the reason we don't do it is that it's much more practical. One, I don't like the additional fees. Two, you have no control of your product anymore. I mean, when your food gets picked up and then five other deliveries are made in the process of picking up that food,
and you're the last guy in
your car,
and they
get cold fries and a cold burger, suddenly they're not writing a review about DoorDash.
No, it's your business.
They're writing a review about you.
No,
and when
smart.
You lose control over that, plus you have to have a whole infrastructure about answering the phone quickly, delivering the order, blah, blah, blah. Like, it, for me, there was literally no upside.
Is this just the receding effects of the pandemic boomed this industry?
Well, yeah, it made it necessary.
Is this a natural de-escalation of this industry now that we've returned to somewhat a more of a normal lifestyle?
You know,
or when people are given the option of comfort and ease, they're not going to give it up unless they actually have to financially.
I think we're getting to a place where these companies have less of a market share because you can make your own decisions about where you go and what you're buying.
Mm-hmm.
And so, for example, the ones that are really getting hurt, I think, the most are the ones who do the shopping for you, the various companies that do that, because that is something that actually ended up being a little more people can go to a store now and they're not worried about it.
Right.
Before, they genuinely were worried about, they were not worried about driving through a drive-through, but they were definitely worried about going
walking
to the supermarket.
Into a grocery store. We had aisles with arrows going down, which way you could go, no more than one person in an aisle at a time. It was dangerous.
Can we just pause on that for a moment?
Yeah.
I miss that. I miss like directional guidelines in supermarkets.
6 feet buffer.
I miss that fiercely. Like, I loved the fact that I didn't have to. This is why I don't shop. I mean, I like Trader Joe's project. So I'm not making any sort of criticism of Trader Joe's, but that is the land of the label readers. And you can, like, you roll your cart down an aisle and somebody is there comparing four different types of oatmeal, and they're going to be there for a while, right? They're settling in to decide which is the least processed of all those oatmeals.
Yeah.
And you're just like waiting and you can't, so you have to back up and like, but with the directional thing, I just thought like,
flow.
This is like,
why did we not
keep this? Like, this is, that was flow. You could get through the store so much faster. I loved it. And I'm sorry that it's gone.
You talked about tips being a part of wages, which rolls in the next story. The Seattle City Council will begin discussing a partial rollback of the city's wage guarantees for app-based delivery. Oh, that was the story we just did. I apologize. It's Burien's minimum wage. What they're doing is the lower end of Burien's minimum wage requirements, which are newly passed, will take into account tips and benefits when calculating how much an employer is required to pay their employees.
Yeah, so that's going to mean essentially that no one's getting a raise in Burien. Sorry, folks.
They're finding ways to move the money around the table.
Yeah, you're not helping anyone there really, unless you're in a non-tip based business. But a lot of wages that are on that end are. So there's going to be some people. I mean, that's not fair to say. Not no one. Very few people are going to be getting a raise out of this. I mean, I applaud any city that decides to raise minimum wage to a higher standard that at least is commensurate with their city. I have no problems with that. I think this one, the way it was written, a lot of minimum wage laws are written like this. If you go to Georgia, the minimum wage in a tip based job is radically different than the minimum wage in a non-tip based job. If you are pumping gas where you don't get your wage is something like 45% higher than it is in if you're working at as cocktail
a wage based industry.
Yeah,
sure.
Yeah.
Or I'm at tip based industry.
So I'm not a big fan of that dual structure. Personally, I think that the minimum wage should be the minimum wage because you don't know, you can suppose, but you don't know what the tip is. And honestly, now in today's world, the tip structure has changed radically because of electronic tipping. I think that this has been a big problem as far as tipping goes. I think people are angry about tips now in a way they weren't for many, many years. And the reason that they're angry is they feel like every time I turn around, I'm being asked, someone hands me a muffin and then spin the screen around and they're staring at you while you decide, will they know?
I was about to ask you that. Isn't that crazy?
This has created tip anger, and people are reflexively, it was nice when you got a slip and you could make that own decision or make no decision and walk out and not tip anyone. I mean, that was fine. And I don't know that you should be tipped for handing someone a muffin.
Right.
However, in different environments where you actually have sort of a longer interaction and you're serving someone over a course of period of time.
Where the service offered to you is indicative of what your time's worth.
Completely. That's when you should. But the problem is it's all been grouped into and this whole idea of someone standing there like, eyeballing you while you're deciding what is the tip on in real time. I'm not sure that I think that has led to a lot of this pushback, and I don't like this, you know, from the Burian standpoint. I don't like the wage structure idea. I don't like the idea that people are we're creating an environment where people are there's a group of people, I think, candidly being overtipped and a whole bunch of people who are being undertipped. Because they're angry at the one, when your landscaper shows up and they spin the thing around, you know, or they're doing an electronic payment processing and you can add a tip on that. I mean, I guess you could just hand the landscaper cash, but it's weird how the tip thing has become so front loaded into it's essentially businesses like mine offloading even more of their own salary requirements onto the customers.
When somebody, when you get carryout food, now I'll speak from personally. When I get carryout food, I always tip a flat $5.
Right.
I don't care if it's a $100 order or a $15 order. I'll tip $5.
Yeah, you're not taking up any booth space. You're not taking up any space.
And no one's bringing, seeing if I got enough water, seeing if I need more bread or butter or whatever it is. That kind of person deserves a tip because they've worked according, like you said. People had asked me for a 20% tip on carryout. I'm like, you're right. I get mad about it, and there's pushback about it, and I'm tipping less. I feel less guilt about putting no tip with little services.
The second thing on the electronic tipping that happens on these various software is when it defaults to 25%.
Yeah.
And I've been in many places where it defaults to 25%.
Yeah, you've got to back out of that.
You've got to go to custom tip or something like that. And people get reflexively angry. Like, wait a minute. Your presumption is a fairly significant tip on top of whatever the service was prior to me even receiving the product.
Right. And prices have gone up all over the road.
Yeah.
And we'll get to the story quick about I didn't realize that there was a Congressional Renters Caucus at the federal government. A portion of Congress that is looking out for the rights of renters. We keep talking about the cost of living and wages and all that's reflective. The largest bill we have is our housing.
Right.
And renters in this town and towns across the country, renters are being priced out of the market.
Right.
And that's one of the benefits of having such a booming economy in Seattle. Great industries like Microsoft, like Amazon, like whatever. We have many, many different sectors in Seattle, whether it's medical research, whatever. So affordable living is hard to find.
Right.
More than a dozen bills were introduced yesterday by the Congressional Renters Caucus in Washington, D.C. Plans that will beef up expanding rental assistance, increasing affordable housing, and beefing up protections against evictions. Is this all just an affordable housing question? I mean, or have renters been...
These are the wrong question is being asked.
By Congress?
By Congress.
Okay.
And the wrong answers are being given as a result of the wrong question being asked.
What do you feel would be a better solution to this problem?
There is a better solution to this problem. It involves much more deconstruction of the existing favoritism that goes toward home ownership. If you start backing out the enormous, literally, the biggest investment almost everyone makes,
is
what you then leverage into college tuition for your kids. That's what you leverage into, like, that thing that home is so front-loaded in your ability to function in this economy or to level up in this economy, and renters get literally none of that. None of it. You need to create a structure by which renters get, forget the rest of the housing assistance, and we've never built our way out of this. No American city has ever built its way out of a housing crunch. They haven't done it. What's happened is a recession typically and people moving out of it suddenly, suddenly there's apartments available. Whenever you start seeing the banners up there, one free month, you know that the market is turning in your favor if you're a renter. The problem is that we have created this through the real estate groups, through a variety of interest groups, through the mortgage industry, through the banking industry. We have created this separate economy for people who own property. And I am a homeowner, so I'm not, but I'm absolutely honest about like that thing and not giving that thing a benefit to renters who tend to be a little lower on the socioeconomic scale. And they have no similar vehicle by which to invest and then maximize, use that investment as leverage.
Mm-hmm.
They have no similar vehicle. Why don't we create one? Why don't we allow them? There used to be like a minor renter's credit, and maybe that's still available. I don't know. I haven't had to pay it in a while, but it is so minor compared to what you get on a mortgage credit. And then just the other benefits that flow from home ownership, from credit rating to your ability to turn that into money for other things.
Right. To borrow against your equity.
But
home ownership's been that's how wealth has grown, right? That's how wealth is transferred from generation to generation to generation.
Except that wealth has not just doesn't transfer to generation. Sometimes it does. Sometimes it doesn't transfer to anyone at all. Sometimes it, you know, look at the home ownership rate and see how is that doing? How is that doing in any big city? It's doing poorly. And the reason is that there's not enough. It's not just that there's not enough housing stock. It's that everyone sits on that. You sit on it because that is your wealth.
That's essentially what you are worth.
Everyone who owns a home, that is probably the most expensive thing they own, the most expensive thing they will ever own. And they use that thing as a key to unlock all kinds of other benefits in the economy.
So they recently,
and renters get none of this. And I wish Congress would address that. You want to make, you know, like renting more appealing? Do that, and people then get more mobile, because you can't really just like walk away from your house, but you can move around. But if you had some sort of financial benefit to turn that rent that you're paying into some sort of asset, awesome.
They just recently passed a law that says your rental history can be used towards your credit score. That's a step in the right direction.
That's a step in the right direction. Yeah, yep. Absolutely. I mean, if you have great rent, but I mean, I think that's always, if you have a black mark on your rental history, if someone has come after you for unpaid rent,
mm-hmm.
it's kind of already been there. I mean, I appreciate them doing that. I think that that's great. If you've got this stellar rental history and Experian or one of these credit rating agents actually embraces that, itemizes it and provides you with a good rating as a result. Awesome.
For most renters, that is their most stable payment. That is their largest investment, more so
shelter
than credit cards.
Yeah.
Yeah, it is. So if you can use that toward increasing your credit score, but isn't that just so you can one day buy a home?
Well,
right?
Yeah, but I mean, that's still not the same thing. And that's still not giving, that's still putting a premium on home ownership. There's always going to be a housing shortage. If what we do is bend the entire economy toward property ownership, and I'm not criticizing it, I own property. But if we bend the economy toward it, there's perpetually going to be a shortage. So why not provide some other investment vehicle for renters, specific to renters, that allows them to maximize this a stellar payment period that does something better than just gives them a good credit rating so they can borrow money at 19%.
Right. Well, in the interim, these protections for renters probably aren't a bad thing. I agree with you. They're probably
fine.
The wrong questions, given the wrong answers. But these are situations.
Drops in the bucket.
But when you're the last element of the financial sector, when you're the lowest,
I mean, I'm happy that they're doing it. But this is more feel good stuff than it is actually effective.
There you go. Well, it's an election year,
yeah.
So feel good stuff is leading the charge. So, did you know that cheating on your spouse isn't just a bad idea and immoral? It's a crime in New York.
Nah, I don't know.
Are you going to stand up for adultery?
We have a former president who was never arrested on this particular thing.
Fair enough. When we get back, we'll talk about that, whether or not immorality should be illegal. So Jack and Spike Show with Mike Lewis sitting in. We'll be right back.
Cringe.
I will be the one guy that is nice to the robot menace.
Or based.
Robo-nanny.
Dead or alive, you're going to bed.
Welcome back to the Jack and Spike Show. I'm Spike O'Neill. Jack's taking a day off. Mike Lewis is in today. Cringe or based, where we play a little game, whether something is cringe, bad, or based. Based in fact, reality, and thus good for life in general.
All right.
We are a nation of laws, Mike Lewis.
Mm-hmm.
I say without the laws that govern our nation, we don't have a nation. Did you know that in North Carolina, a bingo game cannot last more than 5 hours.
That's
a law.
That should be.
It protects the elderly from abuse of a long bingo game. There's some weird laws on the books around the country. I mean, lots of them. You can't use a fake name at a hotel in Maine.
Wow.
Right?
Well, I mean, so
a lot of Smiths. No, my name really is Smith. I promise you. Here's three forms of ID. I'm a Smith.
So that's sort of the anti-stepping out law.
Exactly. Well, speaking of which, in New York State, it is illegal to commit adultery.
Really?
It's still on the books.
Well,
for
there's a lot of New Yorkers I know who would be surprised to hear this.
Would you be surprised that only 10 times in the last 100 years there have been legal actions brought about for adultery in New York? It's probably the most, it's the least adulterous state in the nation. Who knew?
Who knew?
Yeah, New York says it's time to get that law off the books. There's a bill proposed to take adultery off the books in New York. Last time it was actually, a charge was brought, I think it was 2010.
Yeah.
A woman was caught having public dalliances,
right.
And it led to divorce proceedings, and that charge was brought up in the divorce proceedings that it's illegal to have adulterous sex.
Right.
And so New York's saying it's time to let people be people and divorce and
do what
sin.
They're doing.
And
well,
yeah, it's enough punishment.
And if they're not using it, lose it. Right. You know.
That's why they're having adulterous sex. Oh, you have a sound like how you did that. So cheating, Mike. I'm going to ask you about cheating.
All right. What type?
Because we've had discussions on this show before with Jack that. Cheating doesn't have to be physical to be betrayal of a partnership. Would you agree with that?
Yeah, I mean, I think like a lot of things in life, there are degrees, right?
Yeah.
I mean, I'm not sure that catching someone texting and catching someone in the sack, you know, with someone else are equivalences.
No, I agree. They're very different degrees.
So I would say that. Yeah, I mean, it kind of depends on what rules you have established. If you have a partner who likes, you know, either some sort of interaction with some sort of OnlyFans site or something like that, and you don't mind because they're acting out in a fantasy thing that is not actually disturbing your relationship or doesn't bother your sensibilities.
Mm-hmm.
But the whole idea of betrayal is fundamentally in the view of the betrayed, right?
So, yes.
So as long as you have established rules between the two of you, I don't care. I mean, you know, that's to each their own.
Is it a generational thing to expect someone to be true, to expect fidelity? I mean, Andrew, I'll ask you, because you're about getting ready to start your dating life. You're, what, 14 now? How does your generation, if you don't mind my prying, and I'll be, this very personal question, is fidelity really important to you in a relationship, or have you met someone yet that's even come up?
For me, it's very important. I don't know if I talk with enough people or date enough to really give a good answer on that. I don't know if I'm the best metric. But I think that, especially with people around my age, which is, you know, mid-20s, there's a resurgence of that attitude where it's not about the it being fleeting. It's about it being more meaningful, more long term.
I think that's
the way to go. That's the way it's going, at least with the people that I talk with.
I'm going to take a leap here and ask our producer Nora if you wouldn't mind. Do you share that? You're of the same generation as Andrew. Are you a Gen Z or?
I'm a Gen Z.
You're Gen Z.
So yeah.
It's probably pretty important to you. Someone's trustworthiness, fidelity.
Yeah, I mean, I want to like feel like I can trust the person that I'm with, and I feel like honesty.
If you were married and you found out that your partner had been unfaithful, would you want it to be against the law? Would you want legal? I mean, say if you're filing for a divorce, wouldn't that be a nice handy card in your hand to criminal charges?
It'd be nice. Yeah. Useful for sure.
You're looking at me.
I'm looking at you. I know you've been in a relationship for a long time, right?
Yeah.
I've been married for 32 years plus.
Right.
And I've got friends who have lost marriages over infidelity.
Right.
I have friends who have survived infidelity in their marriage.
Right.
And like you said, it's all in the matter of the betrayed.
Right.
It's a matter of how much, what's it worth to you? How important is it to you?
Right.
And I think we probably don't need a law on the books, being completely transparent. I don't think we need a law on the books saying you're going to jail.
No.
Imagine if infidelity and your partner's willing to forgive you, but the law wants to lock you up.
It's handled in civil court. It's not, there is no reason for this to be in criminal court. And unless you really do like the government sort of, you know, like.
In every aspect of your life.
Controlling, you know, government in the bedroom, as they say. I don't know that necessarily is, because there's plenty of remedies in civil court. If you need to find your way out of a marriage and divide up stuff, and all of that stuff is going to, and this is why their TMZ exists for civil divorce proceedings. And so, you know, we've got an avenue to handle all of this. It does not need to be a criminal violation in any way. That dates back to 1909 or something along those lines.
Yeah.
It is absolutely a product of its time, but not a product of our time.
Any other laws you'd like to see enacted or retracted from the law books? I mean, you can't sell your eyes in Texas. I mean, some of these laws are
no
just...
No one would buy mine anyway.
Come on. You're gorgeous. You got gorgeous
no,
eyes.
No. I mean, I'm not... Let's go ahead and say that's a given that I am. But, okay. No, I mean, I almost max out the available contact lens prescription. I'm literally considered legally blind without my contact lenses in. I cannot, like, my eyes are useless. Someone would ask for an immediate warranty on them if they received my eyes as an organ donation. I mean, they're better than none, but they're not super functional on their
own. Wouldn't fuzzy be better than nothing? You think all body parts, the sale of which should, I think they're all banned, right? I'm surprised to see that law's on the books in Texas you can't sell eyeballs. If you have an extra kidney, should you be able to profit and monetize that and pay down your student loan debt?
You can certainly donate it. I think that there's been a lot of investigative reporting that's done on the organ industry.
Yeah.
There are people making enormous sums. Weirdly enough, not the people losing the organs.
Yeah.
So should they be able to? If other people can profit from it, yes.
I don't know.
100%.
You think so? I think so. I think it would put people in unrealistic positions, but it might be the only way out from a horrific situation for some folks.
I mean, it's gambling, right? If you get rid of a kidney.
I had thought about that. You're right. You can put your mortgage up on number 32 black. Why not put your kidney out there?
Yeah.
Fair enough, Mike. When we come back, no stupid questions. If you ever want to ask somebody really smart a question, today's your day. Mike Lewis is here. If you've got questions about a story we covered, if you've got questions about laws that are on the books, if you've got questions about renters insurance, give us a text right now on the Muckleshoot Casino Resort text line.
And I actually have I'll bring it up later, but okay. I actually do have a big question for you.
Oh, fair enough. Great. 888-973-5476 is your way to play along with the show today. We'll be right back with No Stupid Questions right after this.
There are no stupid questions.
There are only stupid answers. That's where I come in. Stupid answers. Welcome back to the Jack and Spike Show. I'm Spike O'Neill with Mike Lewis. Every day we give the audience a chance to interact with the show, address some things we might have overlooked or perspectives we hadn't considered. It's called No Stupid Questions. I'll start with 360. Does MTG think she's eventually going to be Speaker of the House?
Marjorie Taylor Greene.
Yeah. And I got to tell you, I am changing my perspective on Marjorie Taylor Greene. And I say this not because I think she is more of an actual earnest servant of the people. I don't think that's the case. But I think that Marjorie Taylor Greene is learning how to do this. And I think that Marjorie Taylor Greene is evolving as a politician. And she's got the kind of personality that can really learn from and adapt to and manipulate a system. I never took her seriously until quite recently. But I think it's someone that you really can't overlook anymore.
So you're saying yes. Does she think she's going to be
Speaker?
Oh,
she definitely thinks she can be Speaker of the House. I think it might be one of the worst things that ever happened to America. I don't think she really has the compassion or capacity to be a good public servant. But I think that's not the biggest factor in becoming a successful politician.
I don't think she does. I think she's, I mean, to the extent that I agree with you, I do agree with you that she's become at least marginally, she went in radically unsophisticated in how politics works. Now she is less unsophisticated in how politics works. So I'll give her credit for like marching that ahead a little bit.
And she still managed to keep her rough side intact because that's the greatest, she's one of the greatest fundraisers in the Republican Party.
But this is why she doesn't want to be Speaker because you can't actually hold that job unless you actually have ambition toward the being in the fulcrum, in the center point of negotiation. That is your whole tool right there, is an ability to rally. And she cannot, one, the moderates are not even, they're not available. Shifts them all into voting caucus with the Democrats immediately. And they've got a 6-vote margin. Like, you cannot actually make her Speaker, I think, in any effective way. And I think she knows that too.
A good question to that front from Dennis in Seattle. Does Marjorie Taylor Greene said that Mike Johnson gave away too much in the bill to avoid a shutdown? Is she right? Did Mike Johnson make too many concessions to the Democrats and not hold the line in reaching a budget agreement?
I don't know that there was. I'm not sure. I mean, to the extent that making any concession
is too much,
like
in some
moving a bill
eyes.
Forward,
yeah,
that had government funding, yeah, but. I don't know what the problem frequently, and this is not just a problem with Republicans, the problem with the minority party frequently is that you get by being obstinate. You don't get by proposing policy. And so they're getting by saying no, 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 without actually saying what's yes. They want somebody else to propose what's right. It's like the restaurant without menus. Like they just want you, you know, and this is the way it's operating right now. And so did she give, well, by definition, yes. But what is the alternative? I don't know.
Shutting down the government. A texter asked, and I wanted to know as well, as I don't know, how does it cost the government money to shut down? They said it could cost the economy billions. How? I've never understood that either.
So a couple of things happen. One, you've got 3 million people who are furloughed. Because that's how many federal employees we have, potentially 3 million. Right. I mean, there's going to be some who are not, who are public safety and can't be furloughed. But that means you're also the government is then, because it's like holding up its ability to fund itself, the government is out. It needs money the same way every business does. If you cut off all your money supply to any business, they're out looking for loans at high rates because they know how desperate you are to be able to temporarily fund that stuff. Businesses do function like that. So the federal government is going to be in the same. It can't just start printing money, also because many of those people are not at work because they have been furloughed.
Right. And they're going to get paid when they come back.
Yeah. So
you're getting paid to do nothing.
You know, inspections don't happen. Projects get mothballed. Like there are so many. And if you work in construction, you know that if you like shut down the building of a skyscraper or a ferry in Washington State, it's expensive to leave that thing idling. Because you're not actually moving that project ahead and based on your schedule. So it is in hundreds of ways. It's very expensive.
425 says, do you think Ferguson and Inslee maybe want Apple to come to Washington? That's why they're in part of this lawsuit?
So Apple is here. About 7,000 employees. So and certainly a lot of iPhones are here.
Yeah.
You know, tens of thousands of them. No. I mean, that spaceship that they built in Cupertino is probably going to keep Apple staying in California unless it becomes flyable. It's probably not going to be moved to Washington. I think that I think that maybe Bob missed the phone call or two. You could still add on as a state. I mean, we're managing a few lawsuits of our own at this point.
We're not short of them.
But I got to say, I was very surprised that Washington wasn't a party to this because he is a strong believer in, you know, reforming antitrust laws. And it wasn't what I was expecting when I didn't see them listed as one of the 16 states.
You said you had a question for me. Is it a quick answer or is it deeper?
It's a very quick answer.
Go ahead.
Are there actually stupid questions?
Oh God, yeah. We've as assessment daily to this show. There are some really stupid questions and there are stupid answers. I'm living proof of that as well. All right. When we come back, we're going to be joined by Frank Shire. Fridays with Frank. Jackson, I hear today, but we still asked Frank to come in because he and I are very diametrically opposed on a point of view of one of the major issues of our country today. And I've Ooh, come to realize
I'm here for the fight.
I've come to realize that I may be fighting a 2-on-1 battle because I think you might feel the opposite of me as well. It'll be when we come back right after this. Don't go anywhere.